Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Queer Talkers! The first and only Global Award Ceremony celebrating LGBTQ+ video gaming is back. The Gaming Awards, presented by Twitch, returns for its second year this April, and for the first time ever, they're coming into real life, with the show being held at the iconic Troxy Theatre in East London.
Honestly, it's gonna be great. They of course have awards which celebrate LGBT+ contributions and representation in the gaming industry. And this year they've introduced awards for comic books and esports. I'm going to nerdgasm so hard when I'm there on April 25th.
Ooh. The awards feature an exclusive in-person nerdy drag pre-show featuring five iconic artists from the drag collective Sybil's House. There's a limited number of general admission ticket sales available, and 20% of all ticket sales go to the It Gets Better project.
And if you want to join us there, check out gamingawards.com or search at gamingmag on all socials.
Hello and welcome back to Queer Talk, a queer podcast that brings you a regular dose of positive news stories and fabulous interviews. Hi!
Throughout the year, Spencer and I will be recording specific good news episodes where we'll be joined by a different guest each time to discuss some recent positive LGBTQ+ news articles and dive deeper into topics of interest. Today we're joined by the one and only Phil Samba.
Welcome, Phil.
Hi. I'm finally on it.
It's good to finally have you here.
About time.
The last time I properly interacted with Phil that wasn't on Twitter, I wasn't very young, but I was younger and I was a drunk mess at the Gay Times Honours, which is also where me and Mufseen kind of connected for the first time. It was that bloody night.
I didn't know that
night.
Was the first time we met, the first time you guys like properly connected. If we were friends long before that, just with how comfortable you were getting that drunk.
That I wasn't comfortable, which is why I was that drunk. Also, Mufseen wore this gorgeous yellow suede blazer, and I was like, as long as I can see the yellow blazer, he only goes and takes it off, doesn't he, to go because he was too hot.
The arms out.
I thought you'd gone, so I was like, right.
I think I have a great photo of Phil and Alex Leon from that day.
Anyway, we're not here today to discuss me being a drunk. Phil, you have joined us on Queer Talk. We're here to discuss you and to celebrate you, not me, which I'm not okay with.
Are you?
I'm not okay with it, but it's what we do here, so it's totally fine. We'll roll with that for now. You are a health promotion specialist, a researcher, a social activist and writer with over several years of experience working in public health. You're the strategic lead for PrEPster, a charitable initiative which works to promote awareness of the HIV drug PrEP, and specially PrEP for queer men of colour. And you're also a wonderful, wonderful person, which we discovered when you looked after me when I was being drunk on that night that we're not going to discuss anymore. Before you move, is that a Spider-Man poster on your wardrobe?
Yes, I'm a big, big fan.
Wait, who is your favourite Spider-Man?
It's a tough one. It's a tough one because...
Is it?
Well, not really. I think everyone, like, universally, everyone says Tobey Maguire because he's, like, the blueprint. He set the kind of tone for what, like, superhero films were supposed to be. And yeah. Also, like, I felt like his version of Peter Parker was the closest to the comics. Whereas Tom Holland's version is more of, like, it was closer to the cartoons and closer to, like, the ultimate Spider-Man kind of version.
Yeah.
So it makes sense.
So are we just skipping Andrew Garfield?
We are definitely skipping Andrew Garfield. Even Andrew Garfield knows that he's not the best one.
Really?
Yeah.
I think Andrew Garfield is my favourite.
He wasn't, like,
I think it's like...
Rewatched them recently, and it was a struggle to get through The Amazing Spider-Man 2. For several reasons. Like, I don't want to get into it because I could do a whole podcast episode on why Andrew Garfield's film.
I didn't really like some of the way they
huh?
the way they had characters. Like, I think they changed Harry Osborn a lot in those films.
So I think there's a lot of issues with, like, a lot of the motivations for the villains don't make sense. Like, Harry was mad because he didn't get Peter's blood, but then he got it anyway. So why are you mad? Like, it doesn't actually make sense to kill someone for that. And then...
Phil, please start a YouTube channel. On this just review.
And then Electro, what was Electro's beef?
I would
like, why was Electro actually bad when you think about it?
He just went from like geeky person to powers, and then suddenly went
back. Exactly. So there was no like when you think about the if you think about you've got me started. I'm so sorry, but if you think about the original trilogy. Like, in the first one, Green Goblin was, like, there was high stakes because he had to prove something to get more funding for his organization, for his company. In the second one, Doc Ock was trying to create something to create energy, to recreate the sun, so it made sense. We're not going to talk about Spider-Man 3 because they forced Venom to be in that, and it was just, that's where it went left. But, like, it just didn't make sense, you know?
Today... we have some positive news stories, and we also have Phil here. I've just introduced you for the third time, so if people didn't know you were here, they definitely know now. I think I'm just going to kick straight off, you know, the best goes first and all that. So I found a story on Pink News that is titled, Germany gives proudly queer MP a crucial government role defending LGBT plus rights and fighting hate. And when I first read this headline, I was like, hold on, they've just found a queer who's excited about being queer. And they're like, right, you save the queers. Like, this is your sole task is to save the queers. And I was kind of like, this happens so often in corporate jobs and places where, like, they find, you know, Muffsy, you've experienced this, and I'm sure many of our listeners have too, where people, they find, you know, the small group of queers or the only queer at the company. And I'm sure it happens with other minority groups too, and they're like, oh, you should start a group, you should do something, like, or like, you know, what should we do for Pride, you're queer, like, figure it out. So I kind of got that vibe from this. Then I actually opened the article, because, you know, you shouldn't just read headlines and make judgments, which is what I do all the time. And Sven Lehmann, which might be how you pronounce his name or might not be, basically is a super good advocate for the community. He asserted on his appointment of this role that everyone should be able to live freely, safely, and with equal rights. And he mentioned that Germany has and needs a broad strategy to combat hatred directed at these groups, because it's not enough to just condone that behavior. You have to take action and put measures in place to support those, you know, minority groups. So he is actually going to work with different government ministries on different policy projects to ensure that the LGBT plus community in particular are looked after, as well as leading on the national action plan. I believe from this article, they want to be one of the leaders in the EU for these kind of rights and taking action. But now we're not in the EU. Like, how does this affect? Like, I don't think this places any pressure on the UK, or maybe it does. It depends if we're looking to Germany for this kind of.
I don't think it will put any pressure on the UK. I mean, I think it's great that they've got a representative, like an LGBT commissioner in Germany, they're kind of working cross-government organisations to kind of push this agenda. It's a big thing for Germany in comparison to the UK, because in the UK we don't even have an LGBT advisory board anymore because of...
Yeah, we've just got Liz Truss.
Yeah, because of our equalities minister who doesn't want an LGBT advisory board now. So, like, when you compare Germany, what they're doing in the UK, like, we're actually going backwards, I think, and Germany's going forwards.
Yeah, which is a little bit worrying. One of the things... included in this plan is he really wants to include extensive reforms around the laws regarding trans people in declaring and determining their own gender, because we were just discussing this before the call. Currently, they have to live as an openly trans person for 3 years, then they have to stand in front of a court and be judged and assessed, and then they also have to be assessed by a medical professional just to have their gender changed on legal documentation. And that to me is not only barbaric, but it's also a bit archaic. I know that across, you know, we're seeing articles come out more and more across the world where certain places are starting to allow individuals to put X on their passports and to change their gender legally and stuff. And I think hopefully people will follow suit, different countries will follow suit. But it's crazy that that is the current practice.
I mean, to wait 3 years is a long time just to change your gender. And then imagine if you'd got to those 3 years and then you had someone, like your spouse, I guess, did a spousal veto, and you had to wait another 3 years. So, like,
it's also like you have to consider the impact that that has on trans people's lives. And like, although there's, I don't know what it's like in Germany, but here there's a massive lack of research on trans people's mental health.
Yeah.
Although we know colloquially and from what a lot of people have said, there aren't a lot of specifically targeted services that are available for them. So if you think about the impact that that can have on someone's mental health, where they're unable to continue their life because of that, it's really ridiculous.
I remember watching Freddie McConnell's documentary last year, and just hearing about how trans people are on waiting lists for 6-7 years. And it's only when you hear people talk about their story and how it's impacting their mental health that you can kind of really gauge it.
The same here. And like, unfortunately, the pandemic is like elongated a lot of the waiting list that we have for trans people when it comes to like surgery that they need.
Yeah, it's really worrying because, you know, we're going to end up doing more damage to our community, setting up, you know, being set further back, and having to just fight even harder post-pandemic life in order to get these basic things. So I think, you know, I don't think you're wrong, Mufsin, when you say sometimes it feels like we're definitely going backwards. But the positive silver lining to this story is that Germany are going to show us how it's done, and Sven is going to lead the way, and we're very excited.
Your mate Sven.
My mate Sven. It's like Sven, but with a V instead of a P. There you go. We're practically related. But yeah, hopefully they're going to lead the way, and I hope that the UK are watching and follow suit and have conversations with Germany so that we can, you know, do the same and look after our queer community. Mufsin, what's your story?
So my story this week... It is good news.
This is great.
It's technically good news, and it's LGBT. I was on Brief. It was a Pink News article, and it's also covered by a few other news outlets. Dolphins have functional clitorises that they use in lesbian sex, according to, and the Pink News article says this, according to science.
If it's according to science, it's got to be true.
So scientists have discovered that dolphins have clitorises similar to humans, which they make use of in creative lesbian sex. And I know you're both asking me, what is creative lesbian sex, Mufsin? So creative lesbian sex for dolphins is when the females rub each other's clitorises with their snouts and their flippers really often.
This is fantastic.
Yeah. So it's not like they just do it every now and again. Like, dolphins are constantly having sex, and they are constantly having same sex as well.
And dolphins are intelligent too.
They are intelligent. Some are actually more intelligent than you, Spencer.
Most, I would imagine.
So on close examination of 11 clitorises from common bottlenose dolphins suggests that females experience pleasure during frequent sexual activity. So like, I think the thing here is we already knew that dolphins are the other animals other than humans who have sexual pleasure. But I think what was what we haven't known before is that the females experience pleasure. I think it's always, previous research has always been kind of male focused, because I think there was this kind of misconception that it's just easier to kind of measure something that's an outie rather than an innie.
Wait, so, did misogyny exist in dolphins too?
No. No, so if you think about the field of research, maybe in the past there was more male researchers, and now there are more female researchers. It all says this in the article. And then there's been someone clearly has just said, like, oh, maybe let's just have a closer inspection on the female dolphins. And they found that female dolphins do actually have clitorises, which they use recreationally to experience pleasure. So there, that's kind of like, it's been on my mind this week.
I don't even know what to say. Like, I know that, I mean, it's science, so I'm impressed. And I'm really glad that dolphin kind are being quite progressive. And I'm really, it baffles me that we find out these things. I don't know who's sat watching dolphins flick each other's clitorises, but like, you know, what a job. I have not seen that on LinkedIn, but I wish I did.
And did you know that in this article, they were also saying the human clitoris wasn't even fully understood until the 1990s?
Oh my God.
Isn't that weird? This is how research and science in like any field can be skewed by men.
I'm not surprised that, you know, when it comes to female sexuality, that like there was a lack in research or understanding. And you said earlier that there's misogyny within the animal kingdom, but it's not necessarily that. There's misogyny within research.
Well, that was the educated response that you were looking for, Mohsin, as opposed to my response. Thank God we've got a professional on the recording today.
So that's my good news story.
Thank you, Mohsin.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Now, Phil, you have decided to switch things up a little bit, and we're actually excited to do so. As well as having discussions around positive news stories, we want to discuss important topics too and make sure that, you know, all kind of voices and people are heard. So tell us what you want to discuss today.
Today I want to talk about ADHD. I have not really spoken about this besides on my social media, but I was recently diagnosed with ADHD in September, which was also the same month I started medication for it. And I feel like it can be overlooked. It also can be really misunderstood. So that's why I wanted to talk about it today.
Yeah, so ADHD is attention deficit hyperactive disorder. And am I correct in saying that ADHD is different to ADD?
The thing is, I think nowadays ADD is actually a part of ADHD. So it'd be a form of ADHD. Basically, the language and the terminology around it has been changed to kind of reflect it being part of one condition rather than it being a separate condition. So what is interesting is there's like kind of three different types. So there'd be the inattentive type, which is for people that may be traditionally like forgetful, or they may seem like they're paying attention, or they find it hard to focus, that sort of thing. The hyperactivity and the impulsivity come as one, where people may exhibit, like they might not be able to like sit still. They might be like very fidgety, or not be able to channel their kind of energy, as well as be quite impulsive, or speak out of turn, or act out of turn, blurt out responses, that sort of thing. And then you can get the combination of the two, which is the most common, which is the mixed type ADHD, which is what I have.
And I've seen it on your Twitter and your social media. You've spoken about how difficult it is to get diagnosis for ADHD, and then I don't think this is specific to the UK actually, but in the UK it takes a few years to get diagnosis and then to get medicine for it, and in the meantime you're kind of just suffering without any help. Has that kind of been your experience, and how has like coming onto medication helped?
Am I allowed to swear?
Absolutely.
Okay, it's a fucking nightmare. It was an absolute fucking nightmare trying to be seen, because there's like, I saw a tweet that said the red. It was something along the lines of, I'm going to paraphrase it, but it was along the lines of, whoever decided how you get assessed for ADHD must have looked up the specific symptoms of ADHD and then use those symptoms in order to make it as difficult as possible. And it was just so specific and spot on. I feel like a lot of people that are not diagnosed as children and that are diagnosed with adult ADHD as they get older, It can sometimes get to a point in which it's like, I literally cannot go on like this any longer. So to tell people that they'll have to wait 2 years to get an assessment And that's not even to like get the assessment and start the meds. It's just to get the assessment to see if you have it. When I think a lot of people, when they feel like they do have it, like they see the symptoms, and I'm not saying that everyone should diagnose themselves, but as soon as I read the symptoms for it, because I had suspected it a couple of times over the years, but I don't think it was ever as bad as it got last year, towards the end of last year. I looked up the symptoms. I think I had every single thing for adult ADHD on the NHS website. And I was like, I definitely have this. There's no doubt in my mind. Family and friends were all like, what if you don't get diagnosed, et cetera, et cetera. And I was like, there's no way. Like, I know I have this. Like, I know how it affects me on a day-to-day basis. Like, you can't tell me about how my brain works. But the thing is, it's either you try to go through your GP, which will take up to 2 years. There's a referral scheme. I forgot the name of it. It's called, there's a referral scheme that you can access in which you may be able to get seen this year.
It's Psychiatry UK.
Yeah, Psychiatry UK. And then the referral scheme, it just makes it easier. But I think they can see you as, and it sounds me ridiculous me saying this, but as early as October, which is actually kind of somewhat decent considering how difficult it is to get an assessment.
That's months away.
Yep. But it's honestly, if you want to do it for free, it's the best.
Yeah, it's better than 2 years.
I was forced to go privately because like it was literally at a point where I had to. Like, I got some financial support to be able to do that. But if I, not everyone is as lucky as me and would be able to do that. I had to go private. I've paid a lot of money already. I actually bought some meds this morning. And hopefully I can move that onto the NHS very soon, because it's like there's a whole process of the initial assessment, the follow-up appointments, the medication, the prescriptions they have to write, buying the prescriptions themselves. Like, it's a whole thing. So it's a nightmare.
And that's exactly the kind of labyrinth a person suffering from ADHD does not want to go through.
No,
just to prove you have ADHD.
There's this thing called the ADHD tat. So it's for people like traditionally people that that have ADHD are terrible. We're usually pretty shit with money because like there's impulse buys or like late fees, or we'll sign up to free trials and forget to cancel them, that kind of thing. So we tend to, a lot of the time, make less money than people that don't have ADHD, but end up having to spend more. So for us to have to pay for, to pay for a service and the system and medication and all these things to help us for something that is not a fault and that is a medical condition, it's tough.
Yeah, it sounds super tough. Were you able to, obviously through social media, you have a pretty good following anyway because of the work you do in the community and the type of person that you are, but were you able to find support in other people? Were you able to kind of get support from the community?
Interestingly enough, I think it's super important to, if you do eventually start medication, I think it's really important to talk to people who actually take the medication. I was talking to someone that I know who has ADHD. They were really helpful because he said something which was like, the psychiatrist can say this is going to happen or you might feel this, or but they don't actually have that direct experience of taking the medication themselves. So they can only talk from a like kind of, not a hypothetical, but like they can talk, yeah, from a certain standpoint, where if you're talking to someone that knows exactly what it's like, then it's a lot easier and it's a lot better to, I guess, to communicate with someone like that.
I was doing a bit of research before this episode, and a few statistics which kind of stood out to me was worldwide prevalence of adult ADHD is estimated to be 2.8%.
But that's just adults.
It's because I think it's quite sad because like it can, I mean, I'm 32 in March, and like I think it can pretty easily go unmissed. Like, I don't know how I got through my whole primary school, secondary school, like everything without anyone ever thinking it. But then like in hindsight, every single school report I ever had my whole life said the exact same thing, which is Phil is really smart, but he's very easily distracted, or he talks a lot in class. And then I'd get in trouble and I'd come home because I wasn't paying attention, but I couldn't pay attention because I had a short attention span.
Sure, but you were punished and kind of you felt bad about that, and that's unfair, especially from teachers' point of view. They need educating on this. I think this kind of timeline and narrative reminded me of the transitioning timeline and narrative in that there's wait times and stuff. I hate to compare these things, but the same kind of process. And what I always wonder is, like, what is happening in between from you needing that support to you getting that support? What's happening in between that keeps people going, keeps people feeling supported and kind of gives them hope that it's going to get better? Because the fact that you just said you've gone through your entire education up until the age of 32 and only now has it been kind of dealt with, and that's only because you went private, otherwise you'd still be waiting. You know, where is that education and awareness in a more mainstream kind of setting for people to support you along
the
way?
Yeah, but I kind of understand it, because I think a lot of the time when it is picked up, it's also picked up from a hyperactivity point of view and not an inattentive one. So although I can be impulsive, I think I learned, I don't know how or what happened in my childhood or what the traumatic event was, but I learned from a young age to suppress my hyperactivity. And I've been thinking about this for the last couple of weeks, is that I don't think even some of my closest friends and family actually have seen me at my most hyper, to be honest. I think they can see when I get really excited and loud and stuff like that. I think the only time it actually is really evident is when I'm really drunk. I think that's when it's like you'll truly see how I can be hyper. But other than that, I think I learned to suppress it. And then I think I also used my hyperactivity to mask my queerness as well, which I found interesting. Like I was always hyper, yeah, and maybe very effeminate, and then learned to suppress that as well. So I think that's kind of how it kind of went unmissed, in which I just remember that, like, it was more the inattentive stuff in school. And like the hyperactivity, it was kept to myself. So I can see why it went on this.
With queer people kind of co-switching and like editing yourself around people to act straighter, whatever straighter is, if we're suppressing parts of our personality around people as we grow up, then you're also going to be suppressing hyperactivity as an ADHD person. Is it ADHD person? Person living with ADHD?
I've seen ADHDers, and I don't know about that one. And then also the other thing is that, like, I was taught, like, really, I'm like 10,000% sure my mom has it, but no one in my family wants to have this conversation. My mom taught me, like, really unhealthy coping mechanisms of how to basically distract myself when I'm, like, from, like, pain and stuff like that. And I think it's just the same tools that she uses to cope or whatever. And I think I also use that as a way to, like, hide it or to mask it or to move away from it. Like I grew up like with lots of video games. I grew up in front of a TV, which I think is partially what. But then also you have things like hyper focus with ADHD. So it's not that our focus is bad. It's just irregular. So I can spend hours and hours on my phone, but if I had to write an article, I would struggle. For example, like if I was unmedicated. But like I could, like, so I learned to distract myself, yeah, by either playing video games or watching TV or watching films or being out or being social or like just not directly addressing certain things.
I see. And this is why you know every detail of the Spider-Man movies.
Yes.
It all makes sense now.
And this is why Phil Samba never misses a tweet.
You have a really bad short-term memory of ADHD, but for some weird reason, I can dig up tweets from like 2012 and remember exactly what I tweeted. It's so strange.
Some would say that's a superpower, but honestly, the trouble I see you get people in on Twitter.
I've got two actually. Like the other one is like I can tell when it's raining like slightly earlier than everyone else. I don't know. It's giving very like Karen from Mean Girls energy, but like I swear to God,
that'll come in really handy for your LGBTQ activism.
Just before a protest. It's going to rain, everyone. Bring your coats.
In about 2 minutes.
Right. Thank you, Phil, for sharing your journey with ADHD. That's, I think sharing your story about your diagnosis and also the experiences with ADHD is going to help listeners and other people.
I hope so.
That is all we have time for today. A gorgeous roundup of Germany, dolphin clitorises, and some insight into some of the difficulties people face surrounding ADHD.
So Phil, how can our listeners best follow you and keep up to date with your antics?
You can find me on IdiosyncraticXL on Twitter and Instagram. And I guess you can also find Prepster at facebook.com/prepster.info, on Twitter and Instagram at Team Prepster.
Gorgeous. Yeah, make sure you check out all of the work that Prepster are doing, and do not forget to let us know that you have listened to the show on social media. We are on Instagram at queer_talk, and on Twitter we are queertalk_. Bye.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.